Let's stop for a moment near the entrance. This exhibition is titled The Order of Things, The Storeroom of Piotr Beshetsky, and it simultaneously functions as a storeroom for our collections. Here, numerous objects are arranged according to a defined system, yet without specific descriptions or captions for individual objects. Our thought in displaying this collection was to give our visitors a look into the back rooms of the museum and also demonstrate the work of ethnographers. We will take you to the world of objects from the turn of the last century in Polish villages and small towns. Among these, you may also recognize more recent and even modern objects. Their arrangement reflects a classification created by our long-serving staff member, curator Piotr Szetski, to suit the needs of our collection of artifacts from the fields of work and daily life. Piotr Szetski took the function these objects initially fulfilled as his basic criterion for sorting them. In this way, he defined 23 sections, each assigned a letter of the alphabet. Their names can be seen on the tape on the floor, which also allow you to easily orient yourself as to which objects belong to which section. We won't tell you about every one of the over 3,000 objects found here, because it would be impossible. We want to encourage you to search for and discover the significance or function of these objects on your own. We also suggest stopping to take a look at the films on the monitor screens to get to know an object and the way it was used, and also check out the multimedia kiosks. The Order of Things is the story of the resourcefulness and multi-generational know-how of people living in rural areas. We want this visit for you to be an individual encounter with the material, the object, the ethnographic relic. Placed around the exhibition are 24 labels in the form of small black circles with a headphone symbol. You can listen to the recordings from each of these in any order. To hear the commentary, aim your audio guide at the label, like a TV remote, and then press the round button. After finishing your visit, we invite you to take a look at the exhibit Biblia Pauperum. The entrance is directly in front of you. We are once again at the exhibit The Order of Things. Please go straight to the lobby with the elevator. From there, you can go a floor down to the Korean Gallery or to the exhibit on non-European cultures. The exhibit Time to Celebrate in Polish and European Folk Cultures is located on the ground floor. See you next time. Section K, Transport and Communication. All the objects collected in this section, Piotr Szetski attributed to the category Transport and Communication. The objects located here serve to move people or things, or to maintain such objects in good working order. In former times, the world of Polish rural life was limited to a person's home village, the neighbouring ones, and the nearest town, which a person could reach on foot or by horse-drawn carriage. The carriage before us, a so-called wasag, comes from the area around Kraków. It was made in the 1930s and in use until the 1960s. It was a universal vehicle. We see it here in its formal version, with a woven wicker basket. This was used for Sunday trips to church, to the market, or on holidays. For everyday use, the woven basket was removed and replaced with sides made of wooden planks. At such times, it would be ridden round fields, transporting potatoes and delivering manure. Meanwhile, the ladder visible above would be added to transport hay or grain. When winter came, the woven basket could be placed on specially fitted runners, seen on the wall to the right. Please take a look at the large loop hanging above the carriage. This is a so-called hay yoke, or rezginia, from Podlachia. We know from its owner that it was used to carry small amounts of grass or hay within the bounds of the farm, and was still used in the 1960s. The most numerous objects in this display case are the carrying yokes, hanging in front of us. They were placed on the shoulders to make it easier to carry buckets of water from the well. An eye-catching object on the platform to the left is a so-called komoterki, or a sleigh from Podhale, next to which is a small sledge for children, as well as a drag for transporting agricultural tools. Hanging on the grating to the left is an oil box, which held wood tar to coat carriage wheels. A painting with colourful cats in the agricultural production section? That's not a mistake, but rather an invitation to visit the exhibition displayed in the neighbouring room, titled Biblia Pauperum, the Bible of the Poor and Excluded, which takes us into the fantastical and colourful world of amateur art. You'll see more such invitations throughout the room. The images on display are a symbolic reference to the objects collected in this section. You will find an explanation on the small blue pages. Section G, Agricultural Production. Collected in this annex are basic tools for farming that have been used for many centuries in similar forms, often with certain modernizations. Before the emergence of factory equipment, tools were made independently on each farm or by artisans. Hanging on the right are the simplest forks with naturally branching limbs, which were used for turning over grass. Meanwhile, those fitted with metal prongs, on the grating straight ahead, were used for the first labor of spring, meaning spreading fertilizer. Alongside, we see hoes for digging potatoes, formed into heart-like shapes. They are testimony to the joint need for utility and aesthetic beauty. Other hoes have two or three teeth. Also hung on the wall straight ahead are wooden flails for threshing grain. There's a Polish saying that something is simple as building a flail, but this is somewhat misleading. Connecting the two sticks, the handstaff and the swipple, could be very complicated. On the cantilevers are displayed various ploughing tools. The simplest, most primitive types are sokas and arts. More technologically advanced ones include ploughs fitted with mould boards, a part that turns over the soil. On the platform stands a plough fitted with two bent wood wheels. Lying next to the mouldboard plough is a roller. According to information from its owner, this was used for flattening earth 2 to 3 weeks after planting potatoes or beetroot. Its owner, from Masovia, told us how to use it. The young weeds are pulled out, then you plough with an ard, then you flatten the ground with a roller. For sandy ground, serradella or oats, to push down the stones and make it hold moisture better. In dry years, grain as well. They used a roller in the interwar period. Nowadays, we use an iron roller filled with water to crush the lumps of soil. The harrows visible on the trusses were used for aerating the soil and removing weeds. In Polish, the ones connected with hazel twigs are called stick harrows, the ones with wooden or metal teeth, beam harrows. On the shelf to the left can be found straw or wooden seed baskets, markers for planting potatoes, and cups for whetstones, meaning a stone for sharpening sickles and scythes. Section F, Fishing. In this annex, we display the most important equipment related to fishing. In seaside, riverside, and lakeside locales, this task was treated as an opportunity for additional food and earnings. The most fundamental piece of equipment for fishing is a boat. Two of these are dugouts, meaning traditional canoes made from tree trunks, oak, willow, or linden. The boat at the back on the platform is a so-called punt, made using specialized boat-building techniques. On the wall straight ahead is a collection of metal leisters, spiked tools with barbs. They were used like spears. Some of them were passed on to the museum in the 1980s by the Polish Angling Association and the state fish farm in Bytów. These tools had been confiscated from poachers. Displayed here are numerous examples of fish traps of various kinds. The nets pinned up over the boats, for instance, are double-winged fike nets, made recently in 2010 by one of the last net makers from the village of Pszewóz in the Opole region. He knows the old techniques for making nets and tells this story about them. At the moment, I'm making a net out of linen cords, hemp twine, lead weights and floats made of poplar bark. But the poplar has to be at least 160 years old, because then the bark is thick. And nets like this were made before the war. The holes are 25 by 25 millimeters. That was the size for fish before the war. And it was for all fish, for pikes, roaches, whatever fish were in the river Odra. A netmaker also knows how to weave traps in the form of wicker baskets. We see these on the shelves and platform to the left. They're called pot traps. Inside the pot trap is a chamber divided off by a funnel where the fish can swim in, but not out of. Release project. This is a piece of an exhibit from beyond Piotr Oszatsky's catalogue. Next to historical objects from the museum storerooms are displayed modern interpretations made in 2014, thanks to the initiative Release Project. We should emphasize the design specifications for each of the new objects are available for free online. If you want to have any of the objects here at home, One of the stools, a lamp based on a butter churn, tennis shoes inspired by house slippers, or an urban beehive, you can download the blueprints from the internet and have the object made at a local artisan's or make it yourself, adapting it to your own needs. The address is www.uolnicprojekt.org. Section S. Fabric Treatment. The textile machine, or loom, remained in widespread use in rural areas until the mid-20th century. It made possible the production of material for clothes, as well as runners, decorative carpets, and bedspreads. At the moment, the museum loom is making a runner out of colourful scraps of fabric, entirely made by our visitors. If you want to try out weaving, have a go. Here are the instructions. Take a seat on the stool in front of the loom. We have before us warp threads arranged along the loom and colourful weft threads. Weaving happens by moving the weft threads back and forth across the warp threads from left to right and right to left. To do so, please hook the end of the colourful string to the rod inside the elongated wooden object lying on the threads. This is the so-called shuttle. Next, please check which side the string is going. If it's to the left, you need to use your left foot to press the left pedal visible under the loom and pull the shuttle with the weft through the opening that forms. If it's on the right, please step on the right pedal and draw the shuttle across from the right. If the weft runs out in the middle of the warp threads, please remove the shuttle, attach some more string, and repeat the action from the same direction, pulling the weft thread across a few centimetres above the one that ended early. After drawing the shuttle across each time, we have to pull back the reed, meaning the mobile construction made out of two horizontal wood planks installed in front of us. An energetic pull presses the new weft thread into the material that has already been woven. Now simply repeat these actions. If you would like to hear the instructions again, please press the rewind button on the audio guide. The exhibit staff in the room can also provide help. Section S. Fabric Treatment. All the objects collected in this section were used for working fibre, flax, hemp and wool. It was mainly women who performed these activities, so we can say each of the objects collected here were touched by women's hands. On the floor to the right stand large wooden scissors. We call these breaks, and they were used for breaking the stems off flax. Meanwhile, the enormous wood and metal comb on the shelf was used for tearing off the flax heads. The brush with teeth made of nails sitting next to it was used for removing impurities from the flax. These activities produced flax ready to be spun into linen. Distaffs are found on the wall directly ahead. So-called Russian distaffs, with small benches to sit on, were L-shaped. They were very often richly decorated with carved or turned ornamentation, because they were a typical engagement gift. Stuck onto the tip of the rod was a sliver, meaning a clump of flax, hemp, or wool. With her left hand, the woman would draw out the fibre, simultaneously twisting it slightly, while in her left hand she held a spindle onto which she wrapped the yarn. The spindles are located on the highest shelf on the left. Easier than spinning with a distaff was using a spinning wheel, which significantly accelerated the work, making it more productive. Spinning wheels appear in several forms. Vertical, horizontal, and so-called vartsula from Podhale, a type of upright spinning wheel with a distinctive frame. Spinning wheels had decorative elements made by a woodturner and could be colourful. There's an eye-catching object on the platform resembling a windmill. This is a so-called spinner's weasel for winding finished yarn. Other smaller weasels, known as niddy noddies, are located on the shelf to the right. On the shelf to the right, it's worth noting the frames for making so-called driver's mittens for cart drivers, which were made by men for a change, out of wool, using a linen warp thread. Section S. Fabric Treatment. Rope Making. Laying rope and twine out of individual strings was done by craftsmen known as rope makers. We did it back then, as I still remember, because my father did it with us too, because there were four of us at home and everyone helped with something. Well, there you have it. He made them out of pure hemp, because there was nothing else, you know, nothing else to make the twine with, just pure hemp. Well, it was hard work, because the rope was made of 16 strands, you know, individual ones, 12 strands, 8 strands of different lengths. It was slow going, because you had to wear yourself out walking from end to end and know how to lay, as we call it, and arrange the cords evenly as you laid. This is what one of the last Polish rope makers, living in Myślenica, outside Kraków, said about his work in 2010. The most important thing for a rope maker was a rope-making wheel, visible here in front of the shelves. It allowed different types of cord to be laid, formed from several strands. On the shelves at the back, we can see modern rope products, string for linens, tethers for cows, a white and red halter, construction ropes, all coming from workshops in Myślenica and Dobczyca. On the top shelves to the left are the simplest tools for laying rope, so-called balls. Lower down are displayed small wheels and a rope-making wagon, which were used for laying rope on a farm. Section P. Wood treatment. Wood was a basic raw material that had extraordinarily broad application in the peasant economy, and the skill of woodworking was essential in rural areas to create necessary objects. The tools collected in this display served to produce and repair agricultural and farming equipment and simple furniture. Some are easy to recognize. They are widely known because they were found on every farm, and these were axes, knives, saws, and chisels. The more specialized ones served specific artisans, for instance, hatchets for carpenters, a long saw for cutting trees into planks for sawyers, a draw knife, meaning a metal blade with two handles, for coopers and wheelwrights. Please note the lathe standing on the left-hand side. It belonged to the turner Stefan Lisik from Jeziów in Łódź province. As late as the 1970s, this machine's owner turned spinning wheels on it. Primitive wood-turning machines were driven by the strength of the leg muscles, but in time they utilized electric motors. On the floor to the left of the lathe is displayed a collection of tools and elements from Lisik's workshop, the saws, chisels and files he used. There are exactly 178 of them. At the back is a simple wood-turning machine with a pole to turn spoon and spindle handles, as well as a special wheelwright's lathe for turning wheel hubs. On the right is located a wheelwright's bench for assembling wheels, as well as a so-called shaving horse, meaning a legged vise used by wheelwrights, coopers and shinglers to whittle wood blocks using a draw knife. The instrument to the right of the shaving horse, the one with the two wooden bolts, had an interesting application. It was used to lift up a building. For what purpose? For instance, to replace a damaged ground beam, the lowest part of a wooden wall construction. Section T. Metal treatment. In Section T, we can see the basic equipment for every blacksmith's shop, as well as the products made there. On top of the tree stump in the middle are located two anvils, one hornless, the second with a single horn. A hornless anvil was used as a base when forging the shape of objects. The single-horned anvil was used for shaping curves and rings. Displayed behind the stump is a pair of wooden and metal blacksmith's bellows, which were used for blowing air into the fire to maintain heat in the embers. On the shelves to the left, among other specialized tools, are hammers and tongs for holding and grasping red-hot iron. The rest of the display is made up of the products of smithing. Practical objects were made in smithies, for instance, horseshoes or iron parts for agricultural tools. Some products had artistic features, for instance, carriage fittings, gratings, locks and crosses. The latter crowned gravestones, roadside chapels and wooden crosses. Now let's turn round and take a look at the objects displayed in the case behind us, on the right. Smiths weren't the only ones performing metalwork in the countryside. Collected in our storehouse are tools and products from a small number of artisans specializing in pipe making, founding, and bell making. The pipe making equipment is located at the very bottom. In a simple fashion, its owner fitted the clay bowl of a pipe with decoratively shaped metal. Apart from iron, he also used tin and brass. Meanwhile, we see products of a founder and bell maker higher, above the cobbler's toolkit. There are various kinds of clasps and shepherd's bells. Section L. Food storage, conservation, processing and consumption. This is the broadest section in the whole storeroom. The objects collected here, despite their simplicity of form, are noteworthy because of their ingenious constructions and the diverse materials used. Alongside very large and smaller hollowed-out tree trunks, we see vessels made of wood slats, straw, and wicker, as well as a stone grain mill. All of these were used for preserving cereal grains, wheat, oats, rye, barley, and other agricultural products, flaxseed, millet, or ground flour. Meanwhile, grain mills like the ones you see in the foreground were used to mash grain into grist. These mills are formed of a long container and a rammer known as a pestle. To the left, we see quern stones, two round stones placed one on top of one another in a wooden frame, and a handle to turn the upper stone. On quern stones, flour was ground, or grain or plant material were cracked, meaning broken into smaller pieces for animal feed. To the right, take note of the object made of a hollowed stump, caked with flour. This is a kneading trough, in which dough for bread was leavened. The flour left in this tool is important cultural evidence for ethnographers. Similar kneading troughs made out of wood slats stand on the shelves to the right. During a wedding ceremony, the bride would be sat down on one of these tools. This symbolized her taking on a new role of housewife. Section L. Food storage, conservation, processing, and consumption. In this display, we mainly see objects for processing and eating food. Interestingly, functionality was not the only factor determining their appearance. Aesthetic values were often also important. We can see this perfectly in the example of butter molds, a collection of which takes up the whole first shelf. These come from Silesia and Pomerania. They are rectangular or round, with floral or geometric patterns. Some resemble shells. On a small number, we can read the German phrase Guten Appetit, meaning enjoy your meal. All these were used to efficiently shape butter so it could be displayed beautifully, whether at the holiday table or at the market for customers to see. Section H. Animal husbandry. Animal husbandry was a very important part of the rural economy, and the equipment used for it was always characterized by simplicity and practicality. On the far left is a water trough for cows. It was carved out of a solid wooden log. To the right stands a chaff cutter. You needed to simply throw in straw or grass, push it along, and vigorously chop it, and chaff for the animals to eat would be ready. Behind the chaff cutters are straw baskets for laying hens or for other domestic poultry. On the grating to the left hang shepherd's bells, which are placed on sheep in mountain pastures to this day. Lower down are shears. They were also shepherd's equipment, but were used for clipping the sheep's wool. Meanwhile, the tools resembling handcuffs are hobbles, placed on horses' feet to stop them from kicking. Among the tools on the shelf to the left, it's worth pointing out the wooden bowl. It stands among containers made of hay and wood. It is the only dog bowl in our collection. The remaining objects are baskets for eggs or tools for milking cows or goats. Finally, let's look at the shelves directly in front of us. What catches our eye most of all is a strange object made of wood slats in the shape of a crown, as well as a collection of wooden bells. The latter objects are cowbells, while the crown is a muzzle for a horse. Section J. Beekeeping. Honey hunting is harvesting from wild bees in the forest, while beekeeping means raising them in hives. Our museum can boast one of the few collections in the country of tools for honey hunting. It consisted of collecting honey and wax from bees nesting in natural or artificial tree hollows. It was practiced in Poland until the late 19th century, at which point it was banned. We can see the basic tools of honey hunting on the wall to the right. Hand hoes, drills, and long-handled chisels known as slicks were used for carving out hollows in tree trunks. We can also see knives for cutting out honeycombs. To get to a highly placed bee hollow, a special sling was used. This is displayed on the shelf to the left. It is made of thick hemp ropes and a wooden bench on which the honey hunter could sit or stand while working. In recent years, honey hunting is going through a renaissance, and based on historical museum collections, honey hunters have recreated tools to use during demonstrations. To extract the honey, honey hunters would use a press made of blonde wood, visible to the left. Then, to preserve the honey, they used wooden containers made of small carved tree trunks, such as the ones visible on the upper shelf to the left. Some, like the one on the platform, were padlocked shut because honey was valuable and expensive. The transition from honey hunting to beekeeping significantly eased the work of cultivating bees. The carved stump hives displayed here, along with so-called skeps, or domed hives woven from straw, are from older home apiaries.